Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Happy holidays again here on Circles of Change. Thank you for joining us for our second hour. And everyone knows that technology is our friend. Sometimes it's our foe and our confusion factor. So it's really a pleasure to have a second time on the show. In fact, it was a year ago, almost today, that I had Gary Schwartz from Impact Mobile based in Canada. Welcome to the show again, Gary. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you for having me again.
You betcha. And in fact, we have a slightly different context, Gary, because you'd be happy to know that I finally promoted myself up to a smartphone. So,
nice.
Yeah,
well,
nice.
I trust that it was the last interview that coaxed you.
Yeah, of course. That and teenagers that were laughing at me when I wasn't doing what I should be doing. At any rate, let me explain what we're going to talk about today. We've called this segment Courting and Capturing the Mobile Customer. Gary is the founder and CEO of Impact Mobile, which is a firm that helps clients integrate mobile into their overall media strategy. Based in Toronto, LA, New York, and Richmond, Virginia, Impact Mobile services key industry verticals, including sports, retail, finance, entertainment, publishing, and of course TV and radio broadcasting. Now for over 10 years, Gary has played truly a leadership role in the mobile industry. He's a pioneer in mobile marketing and is truly committed to helping develop mobile or m-commerce security and privacy guidelines with several respected industry groups. He's a recipient of the Asia and Japan Foundation Fellowship, a Macromedia People Choice Award, and the Dodge Foundation Award for Innovation. Gary really is a voice of changing business landscape. As I mentioned, a resident of Toronto, also the father of five children from ages, I think now they're 2 to 18, right, Gary?
That's right.
I got about right. He's personally and professionally, I would imagine, sits now right in this epicenter of technology shifting our everyday lives. He's author of the 2011 mobile industry book called The Impulse Economy, Understanding Mobile Shoppers and What Makes Them Buy. In fact, he and I met at a conference, and his subtitle was Getting Them to Go from Click to Ka-Ching, which I love that one, Gary. And our topic today, though, is his second book, which he's released, of course, in e-format, called Fast Shopper, Slow Store. So with that, welcome back. And a different book than your first one, isn't it?
Yeah. I wanted to focus more on the mall and where people actually, making transactions and how that's all changing.
Yeah, but I mean, the concept of the mall isn't what it used to be, though, right? I mean, it's almost an avatar-type experience for some of us.
Right. Well, I mean, the mall is an interesting place because, historically, it's always been an entertainment destination. It's not as much of a utilitarian destination. And so, we go there to be entertained. Even if you're going out for groceries in the 50s, when you went to the mall, you got dressed up and it was an outing in the Chevy, right? And now, you have movie theaters and Starbucks and it's interesting to see where the mall's going to evolve as an entertainment complex, for the family and for, teenagers and whatnot. And then I think the phone is playing a huge role in that metamorphosis.
And explain what you mean by that, how the phone is playing such a role in the reshaping of the mall experience.
Well, I mean, we know that up until even last year when we spoke, the cloud or the internet occupied a very discrete part of our universe. And to a large extent, it was in front of the PC.
Right.
We'd jump into the web and we would surf and we would find good, we would do our shopping. And that was a discrete part of our shopping experience. And then we had a physical bricks and mortar experience, which was to go into the mall. And they were somewhat discrete experiences. I either shopped in the cloud, from the comfort of my home, or I went to the mall and I did my physical shopping. And over the last year, and of course it's happened slowly, but I think it's accelerated so much over this past year, is the cloud has come down right into the mall. And And this term that's been bandied about over the last 12 months, which is showrooming, has really, I think, spooked a lot of retailers, which is the whole idea of, you know, coming into the store and using the store as a place to touch and feel and evaluate the merchandise. And then once you decided on what item to buy, you're going up into the cloud. And potentially right in the store, you're going into the cloud through a mobile device and you're purchasing that in a price-sensitive way.
And not that, necessarily from the supplier whose store you've just frequented. I like that word. That's a whole new world perhaps for some people. It's showrooming. So that more and more stores, whether they realize it or not, they've become showrooms, not necessarily the place where people are going to exchange or hit ka-ching.
Exactly, and then that's a big, big problem for stores that spend an inordinate amount of money, you know, supporting that bricks and mortar real estate. You know, it's not cheap to have, you know, big boxes, you know, all across North America, and Best Buy, Barnes & Noble, and others are feeling the pinch when it comes to checkout.
Well, in fact, I was speaking with Tony Helton, our board operator here today, and telling him you were coming here on the show, and he says, oh, I know exactly what you mean. I was just at Walmart the other day buying Christmas gifts for my six-year-old, and I was just about to buy, and I said, you know, something tells me I might be able to find a better price somewhere. Now, this is Walmart, right? He says, oh, and I got this smartphone. He dials up an app, and sure enough, standing right in Walmart, he cross-shops to Target and Kmart. And he finds what he wants at a more appealing price at the local Target, leaves the store, and that's where he goes.
Right, right. So there are three factors we buy things. You know, you've mentioned the first, which is price. And of course, price is a big factor. But if price was the only criteria for buying things, we really wouldn't leave the home.
That's true.
Because really, you can probably, from the comfort of your couch, pretty much buy most things except, you know, baked beans in a price competitive way. The other one is convenience, and the final one is trust. And so convenience can go both ways, because it can be, you know, if I am comfortable in the cyber cloud, convenience of having something shipped to my door, may be a factor. It also may be convenient for me to physically go down to the store, touch and feel a product, put it into the trunk of my car and drive home. So that can go both ways. But trust is, I think, the edge that the store has. If you know that you look into the eyes of the person who's selling you something and they say, look, if you have a problem, come back and see me, and you can develop that trust factor. And of course, that's really something that the stores need to cultivate. But if they can do that, then that's going to be the thing that will bring the customer physically back into the store. The challenge is, of course, you know, what I call, you know, curating checkout, because if you're in the store exactly to your description, how do you make sure that if they're not going to check out in your store, which may not be the case, because again, they may be browsing and not in a purchasing modality, how do you get them to check out in your checkout in the cloud? And if you're a store that has both, which Best Buy, for example, has, Barnes & Noble has, how do they make sure that they don't lose them to the Amazon cloud?
Well, I think, you know, one thing I really enjoyed reading your book, by the way, my guest today for a second time is Gary Schwartz from Impact Mobile. His book is called Fast Shopper, Slow Store. It's available in e-format. You're taking us back on a little history trip to tell us where that the first vending machines were gum dispensers at a train station.
Right. Well, you know, I obviously deal with technology all the time, but the first thing I tell people is that, you know, do not, you know, focus on technology, because really at the end of the day, shopping or anything that demands, you know, some sort of interpersonal engagement is not going to be led by the technology, in a mobile phone or on a tablet. It's going to be understanding the people behind that technology and how to get to that customer. And so I like to go back in time and say, look, you know what? you may feel these incredible solutions, and I don't know if you've seen these solutions, like, for example, shopping, and it started in Korea, but, being on the subway and having a picture of items on a backlit plastic advertisement that you can click on through your phone and essentially order them and have them shipped to your home. There are examples in the U.S. all over the place where even Walmart has basically gone into a mall and taken over, or a train station, taken over the wall and put their products up there, and you can, scan them, or you can, click them, or you can text and buy them.
I was just, if I could stop you here, yeah. I just recall, even in this past, was probably about a year and a half, going through Dallas-Fort Worth and seeing a Best Buy hands-free giant kiosk, a grab-and-go. And I was flying by and I was thinking, now why would anybody buy something like that in an airport? Or Rosetta Stone software. Obviously, you're striking a lot of people who are trying to learn foreign languages. And then I thought, oh my gosh, this is how things are changing right in front of my very eyes.
Well, this the whole thing is, it's all about understanding. I'll get back to your question about what happened on dispensing candy. But to get there, the whole thing about shopping is basically a term which is pause to purchase. So, retailers talk about pause to purchase because it's really, understanding, you have a shopper, they want to buy something, maybe it's a TV set, and they have to do some research on the web, and then they have to get them into the store. And then when they're in the store, again, as we discussed, maybe they do some research and then they eventually buy, online again. And that whole journey to purchase that item is called path to purchase. And in the world of digital, that path to purchase is a very perilous path, because you can buy something at any juncture. You don't have to only buy things on the endpoints, the store or the cloud. You can buy things along the way because you have a purchase utility, called a phone. Mm-hmm. And so when you see a Best Buy, grab and go, or when you see the Rosetta Stone, kiosk, and these other examples of purchasing which don't reside in bricks and mortar and don't reside in the cloud, but are somewhere along the path to purchase, that's where shopping is changing. Because now, if I want somebody to buy something, I have to think less of path to purchase and more about purchase. And so you really need to grab them wherever you can. Mm-hmm. But as I indicated, it's not necessarily only about the technology, because really, as retailers, we've been trying to grab people wherever it's convenient for them to pull out their wallet and spend money. I mean, really, that's not, something that's new to, 2012. And so the example that you were referencing in my book, Fast Shopper, Slow Store, is the fact that 120 years ago in train stations in New York City, which, again, I take back that whole thing, train stations are very disruptive places, is that, they came out with these gumball machines, or, sweet dispensing machines, vending machines. And really, there you were physically vending something to the person that historically had to have come into, the convenience store, the drugstore, to buy something. And that was a revolution in retail. Suddenly you were buying something right then and there based on convenience. Mm-hmm. And really the revolution with mobile is that it's just made it a lot easier to buy things right then and then because of convenience. And that's why things are changing, and it's, retail is always going to evolve, but what you're finding is the people, the stores that invested, humongous amounts of money in big box are now having to, claw back their retail footprint because they just can't afford that, because now they have to spread it over the entire path to purchase and not just invest in the one big box at the end of the path. And that's what's going to change. And the mall is going to change dramatically over the next 5 years. And I would hazard a guess that a lot of the big box stores that we know and frequent now will have to, go through some navel-gazing and change a lot of their business models. And some of them are going to go out of business.
Well, actually, if you even step back beforehand, and we're talking, of course, on the consumer interaction side, right, the actual purchase. But you think about how also these big box, bigger stores have gone through the whole revolution of managing their inventory in a different way. is when they woke up to realize that cost was when anything sat. And so the idea that I don't keep 50 extra boxes of something, or, you know, that it's all about just that point of on the shelf, and how do I distribute those costs and push them back up through to my suppliers. So anybody that's in retail, wouldn't you say, Gary, and you've been so involved in this in your career with Impact Mobile, they're getting hit with change from both sides. I get the stuff in the door, or wherever I put it before the whoever is and wherever they come from wants to purchase it, they're stuck in the middle. And then us as consumers, though, this goes back to your whole trust element. There's nothing more frustrating, though, when we buy it through the cloud or whatever, and then to try to get a human if we have a customer service-related challenge. It's darn near impossible.
But that's something that, you know, the cloud has to address, you know, and make it more friendly and give it a human face. And, you know, it will. I mean, you know, I think Amazon's a poster child of this, obviously, and they've done, you know, a good job. I mean, Zappos, which is one of their companies, is, a number of years ago would have ever guessed that there could be a business where you would buy shoes online.
Right.
You know, and buying shoes is such a personal experience. You know, we put them on, we walk around the store, and you know, we spend hours, you know, getting that right fit, the right look.
Right.
And then suddenly you go online and you see a picture of something and you just, you know, click a button, and suddenly, you know, you're in a virtual sort of experience. And that's worked because of customer experience, because Zappos has, you know, developed a process that people trust. Mm. And but, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, it's not just retail the traditional areas of retail, electronics, shoes, apparel, but, you know, books and other areas are really changing the business model. And I don't know where it's going to go. You know, I talk about this in the book, but, you know, when Amazon, you know, comes up with a model around bookselling, which is publishing direct, mm-hmm. which allows authors now to, you know, literally take a manuscript within hours, get it online, you know, zero publishing fee. You know, you keep the copyright. It's distributed globally overnight, and you're taking up to 70% of the royalties. That's very, very attractive to a lot of folk. Now, when I write a book, I go through the traditional process. I have an agent. The agent goes to Simon Schuster, my publisher. Mm-hmm. Simon Schuster vets the manuscript, okays it, edits it, then distributes it. And, you know, Amazon is sitting there historically as a distribution vehicle. Now Amazon's sitting there as a retailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it's going to really affect, ultimately, I think, the way we find content. And also, it's going to affect content, because if the content isn't curated anymore, if suddenly books appear online that didn't go through a vetting process, and I don't doubt that there are wonderful books that go online without a vetting process, but if weren't any agents there to vet content, and there weren't publishers to say, well, this book is probably something that we want to, you know, groom and cultivate.
Enhance in a different way, yeah.
Suddenly, the whole idea of what is content and where do we find it and how do we vet it changes. And so, generally, the whole idea of shopping isn't just the physical idea of finding something and dispensing it. It's also the way that we distribute content is affecting the content in and of itself.
In and of itself, that's right.
Yeah. So
changing world. In your first book, The Impulse Economy, you really helped us grapple with still a lot of unknowns, not just from the technology standpoint, but also the whole security sector and then the transaction of the money. And so in this second book of that we've got here, Fast Shopper, Slow Store, still one of the things that's out there that's uncertain is the role of banking. And this, how really can mobile commerce happen in a secure way that people, you know, really feel like they're getting from A to Z and not having anything leak off to the side with security being a concern?
Right. You know, I talk a lot about, in the context of the wallet, which is obviously a big part of this whole, you know, discussion, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, you need some sort of virtual wallet to check out with your phone. It's not the things that are obvious to consumer that are being, you know, grappled with in the industry. A lot of the issues around creating a wallet are things like the revenue model behind that that wallet. And so I talk about big data, which is such a focus for the powers that be who are grappling to be the next wallet. Because when you actually look at the how people are going to monetize a mobile wallet, right now, somebody like Google makes about, you know, $6 to $10 on average per phone in the United States. So on every phone, they're making about $6 to $10 in advertising off your phone per year. If they were to have the wallet credentials, in other words, if you were to use them as your wallet and they would actually know your identity, because if you do financial transactions through somebody, it is the law that they know who you are, your address, your identity. With that information and your consumption pattern, that advertising dollar goes from $6 to $10 up to $200 to $400 per person per year per phone. And so the stakes that are, you know, the opportunity for the PayPal or the Amazon, the Google wallet, there are other wallets out there that are vying for the consumer's trust. The one who wins, or, you know, the few that win, are in an incredible opportunity to grab this big data dollar.
And, because then they'll be able to target the advertising that comes exclusively to you, and that then you're really going to start seeing the ads that are going to cause what you did in your very first book, calling it the impulse economy. They're going to get right to me.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, that's when you give up data, now I can understand your behavior and serve you back, you know, advertisements and coupons that are more relevant to you. And this is just based on, taking that data in an anonymous manner, you know, basically interpreting that data and then feeding back to you things that are relevant to you within that wallet environment. And the bottom line is that the money that the new wallet players will make on that piece of the wallet, you know, I call it the George Costanza piece of the wallet.
Right, yep.
It's not the cash and the credit cards as much as all the other stuff that, you know, George Costanza has in his wallet, the receipts and the loyalty cards and everything else. All of that stuff is where the new players are going to make their, are going to make an enormous amount of money over the next few years.
That's wonderful. Industry. Well, it's been a real pleasure to connect here again today with Gary Schwartz. He's CEO of Impact Mobile. The book we've spoken out primarily today is Fast Shoppers, Slow Store. His first book was The Impulse Economy, Understanding Mobile Shoppers and What Makes Them Buy. Gary, if I might impose upon you, we're going to catch up with you next year so you can keep us on the beat of understanding this major shift that's happening in our lives. Thanks so much for joining us here on Circles of Change.
Thank you so much, Abby.
Great. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.